Right, welcome back to Red Ice Radio. This is the second hour with Dan Johnson, and we're talking about the NDAA. A lot of important points have been brought up, and I hope to revisit some of these, and of course, just continue to talk about this and what can be done, and how to reverse all of this that it's unfolding. It's very difficult when this tippy-toe tactics, as it's called, is in place, and a lot of people are simply not not informed. They are not interested. And there's many different reasons for this, of course. But in any regard, what is being done is by people like Dan and others who are, of course, bringing as much focus and attention to this as possible. And I'd like to begin to ask you a little bit about this, Dan, in the second here. The question is if this is applicable to everyone. At this stage, what I'm understanding about it is that this is about, behavior, I guess, pretty much. If something is done by an individual which is not liked by the people in charge, pretty much. This is the by what the means are that they can take this person and put them away to end the problem in their view, effectively. But is there any title or any position that this doesn't apply to? Let's say that we have military personnel or people in high political positions or something like that. A way, I guess, that they would also at the same time kind of protect themselves. What do you know about that, Dan?
Well, it technically applies to everyone, and that requires a little bit of a deeper look into where does this law of war that the United States is applying. It's not the international laws of war. It's not the Geneva Convention that everyone's used to, that the international laws of war. It's a special, unique version. And I want to delve into that for just a minute to answer your question.
Sure.
And that is, at the Geneva Convention, the laws of war established two protected classes of people, and it covered everyone. So you had non-combatants, or civilians, and you had combatants, or people who took up arms. And the United States didn't like that idea when they came around 9/11, and they wanted to torture, because the Geneva Conventions prohibit torture. And so in order to torture the people who perpetrated the crime of 9/11, the United States government created a new legal class of person out of thin air. And they called this person a unlawful enemy combatant. They literally just took this person and created them out of thin air. It's kind of like, let's say there were only two colors in the world. There were blue and there were red. And I create a new color and I call it gray. And I take pieces of blue and I take pieces of red and I put it in this gray category. And that's what this term unlawful enemy combatant did with the non-combatant and combatant terms set by the Geneva Convention. So this term was created in order to torture the people who perpetrated the crime of 9/11. And it was then changed, the name was changed a little bit conference on, or CFR, so Conference on Foreign Relations, Council of Foreign Relations, my apologies. So after a Council of Foreign Relations meeting on the idea of an enemy combatant or unlawful enemy combatant status, the name was changed in 2009 to unprivileged enemy belligerent. Still covering people from both the combatant and non-combatant categories, but changed to unprivileged enemy belligerent. Hmm. Now, first of all, that implies that our natural rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are privileges. Privilege can be taken away. So it assumes that our natural rights are privileges. And then secondly, it also states or comes out and says that you don't have to be taking up arms against the United States. You don't have to be taking up arms at all. All you have to be is an unprivileged belligerent. See? Mm-hmm. So you remove that combatant requirement. And that's what they used against Anwar al-Awlaki and Abdurrahman al-Awlaki in Yemen. And I'm sure many, 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 many others they don't tell us about.
Yeah, exactly.
And so technically, Since they've taken that category and they've said belligerent act in the NDAA, since they've taken that category and used that version of the laws of war and applied it to the entire world, so the world is now a battlefield. since they have used that version of the laws of war, technically it applies to anyone they choose it to apply to.
Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. So even though it says if you help associated forces of Al-Qaeda, if you substantially support associated forces of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, you are subject to military attention under the NDAA. The president, our president, has assisted associated forces of Al-Qaeda, namely the Syrian rebels, and is not currently being detained under the NDAA because they have the option whether or not to put someone in that category. So really, this is supposed to, as a law, apply equally to all. And it's not supposed to apply to the entire world. Again, since when does the United States make laws for other countries?
Yep.
But it only applies, that's where the two-track court system comes in. It only applies to the people they want to apply it to at that certain time.
So who decides this? Who is the jury, the judge, and the executioner in this scenario, Dan? How much do you know?
It would be the President of the United States or a high-ranking official in the Department of Defense.
Okay.
So it's not people you want deciding who lives or dies.
Wow. So, yeah, interesting with the terminology and all that, as we said before, unprivileged enemy, belligerent. And so pre-crime, this is pretty much, you know, what they've been involved in as well. We've seen, as I said many times now, the definitions changed, but also this idea that they don't like necessarily people who are even now working to preemptively stop the things that they are, you know, about to do as well. There's a kind of a counter tactic here, if you will. Have you noticed also then, Dan, how the language and the definition have been turned more and more actually off and away from Al-Qaeda? It's been turned, I mean, you mentioned it before, of the anti-federalists and all like this. I mean, I've also read a report on both right and left wing extremism, and in many regards it's that is now considered what many people online with their, you know, quote unquote regular opinions have these days, and they are, could, you know, under these headings, if you will, be determined to be terrorists. Have you seen that this gradually has changed as well, Dan?
Oh absolutely, but you have to remember that terrorist really has no meaning. You could say that, and the meaning it's most often used is to use fear for a political goal. Well, what is a political goal? You hear about office politics.
Could be anything.
It could be anything. So to use terror for a political goal, you could say that my best friend, let's say, jumps out from behind a corner and scares me. So he has committed a terrorist act because he scares me because he wants to see the shock on my face as just, a feeling of pride on his part. And he does it more than once. So, well, now he's gone just as if someone who working at a fast food restaurant is, if they only flip one burger, they're not a burger flipper. They're not a hamburger guy. They're just someone who managed to flip a burger. But if they do it more than once, then they have that ist, or they are burger flipperist, or someone who only does one science experiment is not a scientist. So the same applies to terrorism. So someone who says that, or if he were to jump out from behind that corner and do it again, then he would be gone from committing a act of terrorism to being a terrorist. Now remember that this term is not new. It has been used in England, for example, 1738.
Yeah.
In England, the top reason people were afraid was terrorism.
Hmm.
All it is it's an excuse for a government to say, we need to protect you from these invisible boogeymen who are out there somewhere. And so the definition of terrorism is one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. I'm sure you've heard that saying. And so the definition of terrorist changes depending on who's in power, because there's no legal bounds when someone becomes a terrorist. I mean, the Christopher Dorner, again, going back to the manhunt, Christopher Dorner, former LAPD cop who supposedly or was accused of firing on his fellow police officers and some civilians. He committed a couple murders, which would have made him accused of committing a couple murders, which would have made him an accused serial killer. But they said he was a domestic terrorist. So the line, again, that two-track justice system. And the line moves depending on who wants to move it and where they want to move it to. So the idea that there's these terrorists out there has been used not only for hundreds of years to keep populations in utter fear and to keep them from wanting liberty and their rights. But the definition is always changing, as you mentioned.
And soon enough, there might be an activity that, you know, you out there listening is involved in that is deemed to be a terrorist act. This is absolutely ridiculous. And this is what happens. They go through the definition so many different times and revamped what the words mean and everything. And this is one thing I think people have to understand that, and you brought this up before as well, Dan, that, all right, you might agree with the political power in charge at the moment, the current president, the current sentiment, or what have you. But the fact is that this might change tomorrow. This might be something else, and at that stage, you know, your activity might not be in the accepted ones, and that's what people have to understand. If there's an infrastructure for this, way of dealing with the situation, then anybody can take charge of that, they can take control of this, and they can change it overnight. And that's what's so dangerous about this as well.
Not even anyone who out there who commits an act that the government feels is dangerous or is terroristic, but someone who affiliates with someone who commits an act that the government sees as terrorism. Look at the case of Anwar al-Awlaki, who I've mentioned several times, killed in a drone strike in Yemen. How did they tie him to terrorist activity? A couple emails back and forth between him and Major Nadal Hassan, who killed several people in Fort Hood in America the past couple years. And that was the only linkage they had. That's it. But they launched a drone strike at him. It's not the act you commit. It might be that person you're chatting with online. It might be a recent case in the U.S. where people are being associated with Al-Qaeda because they liked an Al-Qaeda-based page on Facebook. It's gotten to the point where it doesn't even matter what you as a person do. Even if your friends are associated in any way, shape, or form with a person doing something the government sees as a belligerent, not even a terrorist, but a belligerent act. That is enough. You know, Confucius said, when words lose their meaning, people lose their freedom. And that is what's been happening.
Mm. If we go deeper into this a little bit and ask, I want to ask you why you think that they've actually, why they have written this act, as you said. It's been updated many times now, been existing for a long time, but it's obvious that they're afraid of something that's going on currently with all these, people are beginning to ask, specifically in terms of online activity, people are beginning to question the acts of governments, etc. around the world. But it's obvious that they're afraid. They're afraid of people waking up and realizing what's going on. And I think personally that they're just simply trying to do something about it. They're trying to have this ability to do this, point by point, if you will, or surgical or strategic hit, where they can, take out one node point that might be an important, part in this, ongoing campaign, if you will, to bring awareness to the people. And that I think that they're trying to do the best they can to win that battle, if you will. But what do you think, Dan? Why are they ultimately doing this? What are they afraid of?
To take a quote from a Randy Travis country song, I hear tell the road to hell is paved with good intentions, but mama, my intentions were the best.
Hmm. Good intentions.
And there are some in our government who are doing this on purpose. There are some who are doing this specifically to stay in power. Obviously, there are.
Mm.
But there are also those, I believe, and it's impossible to tell the real intentions of a person. But based on statements and based on things that they've said, there are also people who believe not that the NDAA will help maintain their power, but believe that they are a good enough person, or that someone is a good enough person to have this power, and they're doing it for good intentions. They're doing it to stop these horrific crimes that people who are called terrorists perpetrate in America, or around the world for that matter. And a lot of them probably do have good intentions. And the good intentions being to stop crimes like this, to stop unnecessary death and killing and things of the sort. So there are those who, and the way you keep a corrupt organization in power is you segment off the different sections of the organization. So not everybody at level 5 knows what's going on at level 3.
Sure, yep.
Not everybody at level 3 knows what's going on at level 2, etc. So there are those at the top, whoever you want to call those at the top, but there are those at the top who are doing this simply and merely to maintain their own power, and they know it. And there are those who buy into the lies that this will help keep them safe, or this will help them keep their constituents safe, or this will help you save somebody. So there's always this kind of hero, this Superman mentality.
Sure,
yeah. In government.
Yeah.
And we love that as a people, as American people, and really as people around the world. A lot of us are looking for someone to come in on a white horse and save us.
Unfortunately, people do, yeah.
and not take responsibility for our own actions. I mean, what do you do when someone breaks in your, at least in America, all of this stigma? What does someone do when people break into their house? They call the police instead of taking the situation and taking responsibility for that situation. And they call someone else to come, someone stronger, someone better, someone better come save us. And that's the mentality in our government today, is that government is there to come save us, to come protect our needs, to come protect us from the evil bad guys that are out there. And so there are some who have very, very good intentions with this. But good intentions lead straight to hell. The good intentions they may have, they are nothing but willing, almost patsies, if you will, for what the real goals are. And the real goals are to keep people, and for people to keep their power and continue the corruption and evil they have while maintaining that power they still have. Because eventually, evil always loses. It takes a while in some cases.
Hmm.
But eventually, good does win out. You see people who are outed. You see families who are outed for corruption. Jesse Jackson Jr. recently in our U.S. Congress was outed for corruption. So you have people, and good does eventually win in the end. But, and the people in power know that. The people in power have watched dictatorships fall and know what it's like.
So and they that, want is that what they're, is that why they're doing this now at this stage as well? Because the jig is starting to, you know, is up pretty much at this stage, and they're trying to do what they can. What do you think?
Absolutely. You see, the internet can be used as a global control tool easily. It can be used to network a large army of swarming drones all over the world. And it can be used to listen into phone calls and to monitor activity. But it also is a liberator. The internet itself allows us to see things our government does not want us to see, especially the more it becomes comes in use. So the things that they've been doing have been outed. And they know what happens to a dictator when his corruption has been outed. He falls. And they're desperate. They're desperately trying to prevent that. And that's why they institute such draconian. If they thought everything was hunky-dory, the NDAA would have never been signed to law. AUMF would have never been signed to law. They'd have been sitting back there, and they would have done nothing. But they know they're losing their grip on power because even they know history repeats itself. And they've learned a lot of the lessons from previous dictators, at least in America. See, previous dictators around the world instantly launched into hard tyranny. There were soldiers on the streets. There were people kicking in doors and taking the weapons. This is the hard tyranny that was launched into by dictators around the world. Well, our current dictators, as I call them in the United States, they see what has happened before, and they're avoiding that by using a soft tyranny. But they know they're losing their grip, because the tighter the fist of despotism crushes a nation, the more people are individually crushed by that fist. And when they're crushed, their pain threshold goes up, they realize something's wrong, and they start fighting back against that fist. And so they know they're losing their grip. The grip they have, they're closing it tighter. If you're on a roller coaster and you know you're not going to fall out, are you going to grip the rails really tight? No, I'm going to sit back and enjoy the ride. But if you're on a roller coaster and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to fall. I'm going to fall. You're gripping on the rails for dear life. And that's what they're doing to America, and that's what they're doing to the world right now, is they're gripping on for dear life. And they're gripping tighter because they're losing control. And that's what the NDAA is really there for, is to keep that control, is a last chance, desperate measure to keep that control in their hands.
Yeah. Well, see, that's as bad as this is. At the end of it, I've always, held that position as well. I recognize that it's done out of fear, and that fear is in there for a reason. And this desperate act that you're talking about is then the sign of ultimately something that is good. Although, as we know, in the meantime, in the name of doing these just acts and whatnot, they are going to cause a lot of problems. But nonetheless, I think just as long as people are there and willing to do the work as you are and willing to shine a light on these things, I think more and more people consequently will wake up and realize what's going on. And ultimately, that is the way out of the situation, I believe. So
I mean, absolutely. It's to realize that we are winning. We need to be patient. We need to not jump the gun. We need to be careful. We need to stay nonviolent and completely nonviolent, because we're winning at this pace. And if we continue at the pace we're going, we will eventually win. It will get worse before it gets better. It always does. You can't go up until you hit rock bottom. Scientific fact. Try it.
That's right.
I dare someone to try to write a chart that goes up before they hit their lowest point. It's not going to happen. And it will get worse before it gets better, but it will get better as long as we keep on this current path. Now, if we devolve into armed revolution, there's not much left of the United States. They win. But if we keep on the current path, they are losing their grip. And just as a calm man in a debate will win that debate hands down, a calm people in a fight for their rights and for their liberty will win that fight hands down against a desperate, clutching elite.
Do you think the assumption that government and or military then actually can manage to keep people safe is a fallacy? I mean, from a personal perspective, I question at this stage even if there is such a thing as a quote-unquote real terrorist. The more you research the cases, you can see that government or military has been involved in many cases with funding or the background covert operations has been happening alongside the these major events of so-called terrorism. But nonetheless, let's then take the official level and say, all right, it's happening, it's there. But as you said before, Dan, this assumption that someone else is going to save us from that and keep us safe from that, do you think that that's a fallacy? That's something that can't occur, if you will.
You see, the reason in America, at least, our founding fathers, the people who signed our Declaration of Independence, people who signed our Constitution, our founding fathers designed government with a purpose in mind. And that purpose was clearly stated in the Declaration of Independence. And it talks about the government's right, or the government's duty, is to secure those rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was the direct quote is that to secure or that the people are endowed with inalienable rights, endowed by their creator with inalienable rights, that to secure these rights, or such as the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments were instituted among men. The reason governments were instituted to secure our rights and not us, it is because it is impossible for us to secure the rights of everyone, and is impossible for government to secure the safety of us. The only person that is ultimately responsible for our safety, unless, of course, we're under 18, in which you have guardians, but the only person who's ultimately responsible for our safety is us. The founders knew it was physically impossible for the government to please everyone, for the government to provide for the safety of everyone. It is physically impossible.
Yeah.
If you look at all of the collectivist theories that they say, oh, well, you know, government's going to do what's best for the people. Well, you know what happens when government does what's best for the people? A minority of those people are left behind.
Suffering in many cases. Yeah.
And, oh, yes, suffering and intensely suffering. So that's why government in the United States was set up specifically to protect the rights of the people instead of protect the people. Because if government protects individuals, there will always be some individuals who lose. If individuals protect themselves, all individuals can win if individuals protect themselves rather than government protecting them, in which many individuals, regardless of the government program, individuals will always be on the losing end, rather than if you give that person, or if you acknowledge that person's natural right, a natural ability to protect themselves, they will do what's best for themselves, and that every individual will be on the winning end.
Very good. Now, how do you see this playing out here? I mean, what's next as a big major step for you guys? What do you want to have achieved as well, Dan, is something we could talk about a little bit later here, how far you see this potentially going for you guys and everything else. But what's next on the agenda for you?
Well, right now we are battling it out at the state at the state level, and we are bringing the public pressure from around the country to the states and saying, all right, legislators, you need to sign on to this law, because the Bill of Rights in America did not give us any rights. Our rights are natural. It does not stand as a ultimate shield and keep those rights from being violated, but it provides a deterrent and it provides ground to stand on in court with those rights. And that's what this legislation does. So we are pushing this legislation. You always build a foundation before you build a house. We have to build a foundation first. So right now, the next step for us is every state legislature across the country is battling it out. And if it doesn't work at the state level, we'll go down to the county level. It doesn't work at the county level, we'll go down to the city level. And then we'll go back up to the state level next if we have to. But battling it out and setting the foundation, that'll be the hardest part, is getting the foundation in. The foundation's in, you can build the house. but we need to get the foundation in. So what we're doing right now, the next big step for us is just battling it out at every state legislature across the country, is tangling with these state representatives, explaining things to them, educating them on the National Defense Authorization Act and the dangers of indefinite military detention, and really just politically duking it out, if you will, at the state level. That's what's next for us.
Is this something that can be taken elsewhere, international, criminal court or something like that? I'm afraid that the same corrupt people are in charge in, at all of these international places, and the higher up you go, it's like, well, wait a minute, now I'm trying to go to the very people that have, caused the issues here and try to, help get them to help me, which is kind of, something you can't do. But nonetheless, as far as you're concerned, Dan, can this be taken elsewhere to an international court or something like that?
Well, I would say the first thing is, why would we rely on another entity to do something for us? Why are we not taking responsibility for our own individual rights and our own individual liberties here? You see, if we took it in the hypothetical scenario, the international criminal courts actually were criminal courts and actually worked and were not merely symbols of power and control and regulatory control over many nations. In, let's just say, in a utopian world where these courts would actually work, it's still the fallacy of not taking responsibility for your own actions and not taking responsibility for protecting yourself and relying on someone else to do it for you.
Yep.
That's
yep.
dangerous, and that's a fallacy in the U.S. that we try every day to overcome, is no one will protect your rights unless you stand up. If you don't stand up, who will? Guess what? No one will stand up for you better than you.
And this, you said this before as well, a very, very good point. I want to reemphasize that. This is not something that will go away overnight. Just like you win one battle and then that's it. And you go home and celebrate and you think, and everybody lived happily ever after kind of scenario. This is, it's something that occurs within nature all the time as well, as you see it. There is a fight between, bacteria in your body and antibodies, if you will. It's happening out in the real world all the time. And it means it's a constant, struggle, unfortunately. It's just what has to be done. Have to be, keeping things aligned, keeping things in order pretty much. Otherwise, it will become, as we've already have allowed it to become on this planet, we haven't, as you said, taken our responsibility. And hence, internationally around the world, we've ended up in really bad situations with really bad governments with all the wrong people in charge. So again, just to emphasize that point, it's something that has to be continuous and we have to be keeping up with it, right?
Well, absolutely. One must understand that it is not a criminal action of currently, at least within the United States, and I'm sure within many governments around the world, if you violate the law once, okay, the people come in force, they push you back in bounds, you continue on, you don't violate the law anymore. That's a criminal action, at least as far as government is concerned. But when government, every single time they violate the law and the citizens push back, they violate three more, then that is, and I'm not talking about governmental laws that they set. I'm talking about natural laws and the boundaries that governments are put in with constitutions. And when government goes outside those boundaries multiple times, and the more you push back, that is how many more times they go outside those boundaries, then it is no longer a criminal action. It is a war. And it is a war at the intellectual level. It is a war at the information level. It is a war. It is not a war with guns and violence. It is a information war and a intellectual war and a legislative war. But it's a war. If you go to war and you win one battle, like I said, do you go home and celebrate? No. The enemy is going to overrun your camp and you're going to lose. So we are at war for our rights. And therefore, we must not only be vigilant, but we must be actively vigilant and actively out there pursuing and pushing government back into its bounds until it gets to the point where we can rest for a little bit and then just keep an eye on it. There is no keeping an eye on our rogue government the way it is now. I mean, our president, besides all the unconstitutional acts that we all show that he's done, our president has actually been indicted in court for appointing people during recess, which is a direct and total violation of the Constitution, nowhere near as bad as anything else he's done. But even still, that should be a violation of his office. He should leave immediately. But he isn't. So they're violating it more ways than you can count. And since they're violating it so many ways, in so many different aspects, you cannot treat it like a criminal action. You cannot get up, fight, and go home. There is none of that. It has to be eternal and everlasting vigilance to push government back in its place. Because I guarantee you, when you take a break, they're not.
Yeah. Now, it's another tactic that they use. We've seen this in many cases before. In other scenarios, they pass these things, you know, on the New Year's Eve or you know, Christmas Day or things like that, when not a lot of people are involved. I think even the Federal Reserve Act, or what it actually is called, was passed on a similar day as well. So this is a common thing to look out for, I guess, right?
On a major holiday or a major event, look out, because odds are they're trying to pass something somewhere to get around the will of the people. You look at CISPA, which is something, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, that is SOPA's little brother. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with SOPA, but the Stop Online Piracy Act, or SOPA, last year, was we're coming around to the year anniversary of its introduction. Actually, that was, January 29th or 28th.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have censored websites. Any website hosted in the United States, it would have censored them if the government felt like it, essentially.
Yep.
And ACTA was another European version of that. And think of CISPA as SOPA's little brother, because CISPA allows, or forces, really, private companies to give information over to government if they ask for it. When they'll always be asking, so they'll always be giving your information. It literally removes privacy in the digital age if there was any left.
Yep, exactly.
So, but the reason I bring up CISPA is the NFL, or National Football League, and we're not talking European football, we're talking American football, which is a combination of rugby and extra armor. American football is huge here. So on the National Football League's draft, on the big day of the draft, where all the guys around the country are huddled around their screens guessing who's going to get picked by what team, and they pass CISPA through the House. So yeah, they'll pick these days when the people aren't paying attention, and they'll pass something through.
That's right. And I think we had this link up recently here, but allegedly haven't gone through the whole article. But again, CISPA is back, allegedly, and they're trying to push it through again. So again, let's just reemphasize that point, that they'll keep trying, they'll keep pushing all the time, you know?
Yeah, and there, it's a war of attrition. It's a war, unfortunately, we're losing because we don't have that resilience that our founders had in America. But it is a war of attrition. So yeah, they introduced SOPA again. They reintroduced it, I want to say either a week, maybe a week and a half ago, and it's back, and it's going to be back, and it's going to be back. Like I said, it's not a criminal action. We're in a war. We have to start acting like we're in a war. We can't go home when the government stops violating one of our rights, when the government calms the restless natives.
So how would you like to see this play out, Dan? I'm just curious. It's always fun to hear, you know, what people would like to do if they could. Let's say if you had the resources, the manpower, whatnot. How far would you like to go with this? Where would you like to take it if you could, wherever you could?
Well, the idea eventually is to bring our government to constitutional governance, to operating within and only within the bounds of the Constitution. And that is the eventual goal, is obviously the United Nations, if they were just discussing things, it would be a brilliant idea. I don't, you know, why not let smart people get in a room and discuss things with each other?
Sure.
It doesn't hurt at all. But once they've declared themselves a regulatory body and they have the power to regulate the world, well, most superhero movies I can think of don't have the good guy controlling the world. It's always the bad guy who wants to control the world. So get the UN out of the United States and restore the United States to a strict, small, constitutional government. Get rid of the federal government's hand in education has brought a lot of this about. Get rid of the federal government's hand in education. We don't need indoctrination from the government. And the eventual goal being to let people live their lives the way they want to live them, so long as they don't violate the liberty, the life, or the property of another person. And that is how our founders designed our government. And it's never going to be perfect. There's never going to be utopia. But we can bring our government inside the constitutional bounds that worked. They worked really well. In fact, in some cases, they still work really well in America. So bringing us back under a system that has proven results, you're going to remove the worry of a lot of America. I mean, what? We got, I think, at least 9 million people in the U.S. are on depression medication.
Yeah, yep.
And so in a lot of this whole, the societal problems, the crime, all of this stems from an overarching government influence outside the reign of the Constitution, outside the boundaries of the Constitution. So the eventual goal, bring government inside those boundaries. When we bring government inside those boundaries, we will, in effect, solve most of the problems in society today.
I think many people have difficulty, unfortunately, understanding that, because people are, as you said, unfortunately manipulated by the promises of a perfect world. I question that to be something that can't exist. It's impossible, at least. But at least, as you said here, it's something that you could try to aspire to attaining, a situation where as many people as possible have the capacity to do what they want with their life, so that they can choose for themselves how they want to spend their time, and they can work on their dreams, if you will, and just, you know, do what they want to do.
And they create their own perfect world.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when someone tells you, we're going to live in a perfect world, it's not a perfect world to you, it's a perfect world to them. So when you have government saying, we could all live in a perfect world, and the government can keep you safe, then you're relying on government to tell you what a perfect world is. And only their idea of a perfect world comes true. If you let individuals decide what their perfect world is, then you can have a, at least almost, or as close to as possible, perfect world for each individual. It's never going to be perfect. Life isn't perfect. Get over it. If you haven't already, live a little longer. But that person can decide what they want to do. I mean, in our society today, if I say the wrong thing on Facebook and it doesn't violate anyone's liberty, it doesn't violate anyone's property, and it doesn't violate anyone's life, if I say the wrong thing on Facebook, I will have Department of Homeland Security at my door 24 hours later questioning me on what I said. That happened in America. It happens around the world. But if I can be free to say what I want to say, to do what I want to do, so long as I don't violate another person's rights, then I can have the life I want to live, be happier in the life I want to live, and that other person can be happier in the life they want to live. Happier people equals less crime, believe it or not.
It's true. I believe it's true. Yep.
Happy people usually are not robbing the local video game store. And not stealing bread because their children can't eat. You have to reduce the size of government, get it out of people's lives, and get people off this drug, basically, that the government needs to solve their problems. When you do that, you don't have a perfect world, but you allow people to create their own world in the way they want to see it. And that is beautiful. And that is how a society needs to run. No one running it, but people deciding for themselves, so long as they do not violate another person, deciding for themselves what they want to do and what their perfect world is.
And today, America is at least peripherally heading towards the opposite direction. I mean, I see this from a Northern European perspective as well. Scandinavia, where social planning has been an incredible big part of life in Scandinavia for 50, if not even more, 60, closing to 60, 70 years now. And government is huge. It's I mean, they make the sun go up in the morning. You know, it's like it's really happening. And I can see the rhetoric as well from my perspective that this is something that's beginning to take hold, unfortunately, in America. And as you talked about, the ideas that it was founded upon was a lot of Europeans that tried to escape the, you know, feudal terror that was instigated in many cases, and wanted to get out from that. And I really hope that America doesn't go that way and head more in that direction, you know? And so at the same time, we're talking about, you know, as you've been doing here, Dan, a victory, and that the things are beginning to move in the right direction because you can see the fear, you know, expressed in that. But as always, in times of great opportunity, it's also a great opportunity for the other side to also take control. And so how do you see that? If America is heading more of a direction of big government, how can one combat that, do you think, Dan? Big question, I know, but
it's a difficult question to answer, and I'll attempt to answer it in the best way I can. But I would first of all challenge the assumption that America is heading toward big government. We are big government.
That's right. But even more so, that's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, even more so. I mean, our government doesn't make the sun up and come up in the morning, but they keep the terrorists from keeping the sun down.
Right. That's a good one.
That is the way that American government has become. Mm. And the idea to bring it back is number one, take action. Persist, because there's enough people in America who realize that government's violating the Constitution, violating our rights and liberties, that if each one of those people dedicated their lives to taking action, or even hours of their day to taking action and to finding out what action can be taken, finding what works and take that action, our country would be restored to constitutional governance in a couple years. No problem at all, because we have the people.
So it's really about information, education, and interest then, in a way.
Information, education, and action. 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 you know, I feel like a movie director here. Action, action. If you can know everything in the world, but to know and not to do is not to know. You can know all of this thing about the government taking over your rights and freedoms, and you can try to tell other people about it. But if you never take that step, your actions speak so loud that your words I cannot hear. If you never take that step to take action, nothing's going to change. So action is what we need. Our founding fathers had 3%. That's it. Nothing more. 3% of people in America participated in the American Revolution.
It's nothing. It's nothing at all.
Exactly. It's nothing. We have 7% of people in America who are aware of what's going on, at least to a certain extent, of government violating the Constitution and our rights and liberties. We have double that. And all it took for them was to take action. All it takes for us is to take action. I'm not talking about violence. I'm not talking about revolution. So that the people who are listening in from DHS, NSA, CIA, etc., I'm not talking about violence. I'm not talking about violent revolution. And being detained under the Patriot Act is not my idea of a fun time. But I'm talking about taking action, getting involved in their local governments, in their state governments, and pushing back against this. That's what it's going to take. Action. And if we can bring that type of action, that's how we'll restore this country. That's how we'll restore the world. Because the Constitution, yes, it applies to the United States, but we didn't copyright it. Anybody around the world can take that Constitution and run with it. And I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's a lot better than most of the systems in the world, most of the governmental systems. So all it takes is action. If we can get people, and that's why we've been so successful. We're only a year old as an organization. And that's why we've been so successful in just a year, is because we're taking the people who are already aware of what's happening and giving them something to do and giving them an action to take. And that's all it takes, is action. If we can bring that, we can really restore this country and eventually the world to constitutional governance.
Do you guys have people involved from every state at this point, or is there something missing here yet?
There's a couple states that are missing. A lot of them are states that have a rural population, so there isn't that many people, and there aren't many people online or have maybe heard of us. When people hear of us, they often get involved right away, especially when they know how bad and how dangerous the issue we're fighting is. So we have a couple states. We have about 14 states where we don't have a state team leader, and of those, we probably have about 5 or 6 states where we don't have anyone who has either contacted us or what have you.
So give us those states, we know, so people out there can catch up on this here.
Okay, yeah, definitely. The states where we need some team leaders are like Alaska is one of them.
No big surprise. For some reason. Well, although, I mean, I know there's a lot of independent people in Alaska. They go there to get away, so I've heard anyway, but maybe they're not too interested, I guess, in what's going on in the rest of the country or something like that. But
or just disconnected to the internet.
That could be too. It's too cold.
Possibility. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So Alaska, Arkansas, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Maine, Minnesota is interesting, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, New Mexico, North Dakota, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Utah, and Vermont.
All right. Well, then you who are listening, you know exactly what to do. If and when you want to get involved, of course. But yeah, no, but that's good. But that should definitely be a goal for you guys then, to get folks from each and every state to be part of it, I guess, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we're experienced. We are the organization that's looked to around the United States as the experts on NDAA. We have the resources, we have the tools. We're just waiting for someone to step up. Skills can be taught, passion cannot. And if someone has the passion and the meat, and they want to fight for their country and they want to fight for the freedoms and liberties of their country, then we'll train them and we'll put them through the paces. We've got the plan. It's been proven to work. We're just waiting for the people to step up.
All right, very good, Dan. We're going to begin to wrap things up here for this time. But of course, I want to thank you for your time. We appreciate it. It's always refreshing to hear from young man who's driven and, of course, has an interest in these questions, in these topics and everything else. So that's very good. But please give us the website again. And if there's anything else you'd like to give out or leave us with here at the end, Dan.
Yeah, definitely. Our website is pandaunite.org. That's PANDAUNITE.org, pandaunite.org. I also want to point people, our legal or legislative team, rather, who are brilliant people, constitutional lawyers and constitutional purists, has been a great help to me. And their website is the intolerableacts.com. That's the intolerableacts.org. So theintolerableacts.org, and they cover a little bit more than just the NDAA. Some of the Patriot Act and things inside the U.S. have been pretty dangerous for anybody around the world, and they're a great place to also go to. So I want to thank you again for having us on the program. And it's been wonderful to be on. And if I have anybody come and detain me and say that we're not going to be tapping everything you have under the Patriot Act because you were speaking on international radio, I'll let you know.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dan. Well, we hope that doesn't happen. We hope people are listening in and actually learning something from it. That's what I usually say. So we can get some people to actually realize what they're part of in this monstrous machine of governmental, military, whatever we should call it. But nonetheless, thanks again, Dan. Keep up the good fight.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening and for supporting us with a membership. We couldn't do this without you, and we appreciate your encouragement to allow us to grow, expand, and continue to offer you more. Stay cool, and I hope you take some time to reflect on the transient nature of most, if not all, man-made constructs on this planet, while not being afraid to recognize that we are in a horrible downward spiral of de-evolution. We've allowed the worst of liars and control freaks to take charge of our lives, and the question is if you will step away and put distance between yourself and those who wish to manipulate you, break the spell that they have put on you, and realize that you are free. Until next time, take care. Talk to you then.